You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. It was a good weekend of Mets baseball as they were able to pick up another series victory, this time beating the Colorado Rockies, and we have a lot of baseball to break down on today's show. In the first segment, I want to talk about Jacob DeGrom's performance in the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday. In the second segment, I want to talk about how the Mets came back and won that game for DeGrom in the seventh inning. I'll also touch on the second game of that doubleheader, which was not as exciting as the Mets ultimately got blown out by a score of 7-2. Finally, in the third segment, another great pitching performance to break down as Marcus Stroman might have even one-upped DeGrom with a fantastic performance on Sunday to lead the Mets to that series victory. So we will talk about that. Before we get to any of it, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. So game one on Saturday, DeGrom's on the mound, and immediately you're thinking, he can go the distance. Seven-inning game, this should be prime for Jacob DeGrom to go out and win you a ball game. And that was really what he was doing early on in this game. In the second inning, the Rockies had a chance to put some runs on the board early, as Charlie Blackmon hit a leadoff double. DeGrom then walked CJ Cron. With two runners on, DeGrom did what he usually does. He tightened up and he struck out the next three batters he faced, and that began a streak that had the fan base, maybe even people all the way around baseball, glued to what DeGrom was doing at Coors Field, because he struck out nine consecutive batters from that point on. Now, in between this three-inning stretch where DeGrom was unhittable, the Mets were able to get out to an early lead. And who scored the one run? None other than Jacob DeGrom himself. He got a leadoff base hit in the third. Brandon Nimmo tried to bunt for a hit, but at least got it down as a sacrifice. DeGrom went to second. Lindor came up, grounds it out, and moved DeGrom over to third. Dominic Smith drew a walk, and then Pete Alonso got the clutch base hit to score DeGrom. Again, though, from the second inning, when there was that threat by the Rockies, through the fourth, DeGrom struck out nine in a row. And you really have to look at the history of the sport to realize how impossible it is to do what he did. There's only been seven pitchers in MLB history who have recorded nine strikeouts in a row. Early on in DeGrom's career against the Marlins as a rookie, he started off a game with eight straight strikeouts. So that was, you know, his first foray in striking out consecutive batters on a long streak. And I remember Tom Seaver's name gets brought up. Is he going to be able to tie that record that Seaver has for being the only pitcher in MLB history to have 10 strikeouts in a row? And back in 2014, DeGrom couldn't do it. And then again in 2021, DeGrom couldn't do it as he ends up giving up a ground ball, which again, this is how ridiculous it is to strike out 10 in a row, because all somebody has to do is put a ball in play. So a routine grounder to Jeff McNeil, which should have been an out, he actually made an error on the play, ends this streak. Nothing wrong in that if you're a pitcher, unless you have a strikeout streak going. So that is how insane it would have been had DeGrom gotten that 10th strikeout. And then you look at what happened next. He strikes out the next batter. So he struck out 10 of the 11 batters he faced. The way this guy is able to just completely dominate hitters, it is absolutely ridiculous. He's going to lead the league in strikeouts this year if he's healthy. And quite honestly, it frustrates me that we had that 2020 season and the kind of sham Cy Young. Because Trevor Bauer wins a Cy Young off of 12 starts, and he deserved it, don't get me wrong. Under the context of that season, he was the best pitcher. But had we had a full 2020 season, I have no doubt in my mind that Jacob deGrom would have chased him down and won that Cy Young. And so we could be in a situation right now watching the best pitcher on the planet as he is going for what would have been a fourth consecutive Cy Young, a feat only two pitchers have ever accomplished, Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson. So that was just another element to what was going through my head as I'm watching, you know, DeGrom carve up the Rockies is, you know, we're watching a pitcher at his absolute apex, and it's so rare in sports that you get to see one of the greatest of all time in real time, and you sit back and appreciate it. And when he does things like this, when he is, you know, about to etch his name in a record book alongside Tom Seaver, and it could have been a record the two of them jointly shared because no other pitcher in MLB history has been able to accomplish that feat. It's just special. And even though he came up a bit short, it doesn't make it any less special. But getting back to the context of the game here, Josh Fuentes reaches first on an error by Jeff McNeil. DeGrom strikes out the next batter, but then gives up a triple, which scored a run, a sacrifice fly, which scored another, and then a home run. So suddenly, everything unravels for DeGrom, and the Mets are losing 3-1. In a weird way, you could almost say because of his ridiculous standards, it feels like a shocking revelation when he gives up three runs. He said it's like almost, I can't say a bad start, but under the ridiculous expectation that he's set, it is kind of a shock to your system when three runs come across when he's on the mound, although none of them were technically earned because of that McNeil error. But now you're looking at this situation heading into the sixth inning where the Mets are trailing by two runs. Their entire team feels like it gets the yips whenever Grom's on the mound. So you think there's no chance they're going to win. Pete Alonso homers to cut that deficit in half. DeGrom pitches the bottom of the sixth, picks up two more strikeouts to tie his career high again. Second time this season, he's had 14 strikeouts. And then you move on to the seventh inning. And the Mets were able to come through for DeGrom and get him a victory. I want to talk about that game in just a minute to get more into detail about what happened in that seventh inning. I do want to note while we're talking about the pitching, though, that Edwin Diaz came in with the lead and notched the save for the Mets and struck out the side. So the Mets were able to tie a Coors Field record for the most strikeouts ever by an opposing team at 17, and they needed just seven innings to do that. That is absolutely absurd. To strike out 17 batters in a 21-out game, it's like Little League. Literally, it is like Little League. There was one of my prized sports moments when I was playing as a kid in Little League was me and my buddy pitched a perfect game with 17 strikeouts in a six-inning game. Now, the other team was terrible, but that was like 12-year-old Little League against an awful team. This is Major League Baseball against professional hitters, and somehow the Mets pitching was so dominant on Saturday that they struck out professionals 17 times in a seven-inning game, and that sets them up to win. I want to talk about the top of the seventh inning of that game and also talk about the letdown of Game 2 in just a minute. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female designers have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only at BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. This collection features high quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight, which is fairly priced, so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're in the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football's been over, but the NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. With real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine, BetOnline has you covered. For all the new scores and odds, it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. So now let's talk about the Mets' big comeback in the top of the seventh inning of the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday. The Mets don't come back here, they lose this series. And that is the resilience you want to see in this ball club, that when they're down, they can still come back and win a close game. And so James McCann comes up, gets a leadoff single. That gets everything going. McCann kind of gets forgotten behind some of the other names that came through in this inning, but he really did start off the rally. Albert Amor comes in as a pinch runner for McCann, and Jonathan Villar comes up to the plate. Villar rips a double into the right field corner. Albert Amor, to his credit, had some outstanding base running to score on this play. Head first dive just beats the throw, and the Mets have tied the game, and that relieves the pressure for the rest of the lineup to ultimately come through and win this game. And when VR gets the hit, I know any devoted listener to this show immediately thinks of Ryan Finkelstein, host of Locked On Mets, who has had this give and take about VR all season, where I've been critical of the guy. I had my quote-unquote apology last week where I was maybe being sarcastic. Here's what I'm going to say about Jonathan VR. I will not back down on my point because the dude is raking now. He is coming through in the clutch. Now, I'll note that when he got the start in game two, he did go 0 for 3 with a strikeout, but that's not my place to say that right now. Or maybe it is my place, because when I say things like that, I once again become at the forefront of everyone's mind as VR comes up in a clutch spot, and he's coming through. So shout out to VR for continually making me look bad. I love it. Make me look bad all day long. I will play this role all season if it means the Mets win games. They end up tying it there with VR's hit. He goes to third when Brandon Nimmo gets a base hit. And then Francisco Lindor comes through with a single of his own. And the Mets take the lead. Now, Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil struck out after that. But with four consecutive hits to start off the seventh inning, the Mets put together a two-run rally that takes the lead. And Edwin Diaz, as I previously said, locked down the save, and the Mets get a huge victory. So that was definitely the defining moment of the weekend. You get that win, all of a sudden, it's kind of gravy at that point to play game two. You would have loved to have won the series right there. The Mets were unable to do so, but it set up the opportunity to have a rubber match on Sunday with Marcus Stroman on the mound. Now, when it comes to Game 2, the Mets were kind of in a rough spot from the jump because Joey Lucchese has had a weird season to only get into one game in relief, to be asked to kind of be available coming out of the bullpen, but knowing at some point you'll be inserted back into the rotation. It's just tough to deal with that, and that's the realities of the 2021 season with the Mets, with all of the rainouts and snowouts and the COVID to start the year from the Nationals. It's just been tough for some of these individual guys to get into that rhythm of a season. And so Lucchesi goes out in the first inning and gets knocked around, gives up 3 runs on 4 hits. He settled down from there, pitching a scoreless second and third. But that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. You were riding high on the momentum of game one. And then right away in the first inning, you look up and you're down by 3. The Mets were able to make it a ball game in the fourth inning. They actually hadn't had a hit until that fourth inning. But Brandon Nimmo got a base hit. Francisco Lindor drew a walk. And then with first and second and nobody out, it looked like the Mets were going to come up empty as Conforto and Alonso both struck out. But Jeff McNeil came through in the clutch with a 2-out double that scored Lindor and Nimmo. That cut the deficit to 1. And from there, the Mets just couldn't really string together any more offense throughout that second game. I do want to talk about Robert Gsellman, who finally made an appearance in a game this year. And I want to credit Rojas for finding a nice little spot for Gsellman to come in. It was a close game, obviously. That was right after the Mets had scored some runs. But this was the bottom half of a really bad Rockies lineup. So it was a great point to get Gsellman into a game where it was close enough that you can maybe build some confidence and he doesn't just feel like he's pitching in a blowout one way or the other. But also, it was an easy enough appearance considering the guys that he faced that he was able to get through it. He gave up a 1-out double that had the 8 and 9 spots in the lineup. German Marquez was pitching a gem for the Rockies, so they were not going to pull him even though it was a close game. No reason to do that. So he was able to get the 8th hitter out, struck him out, and then got Marquez out to get out of the self-inflicted jam after giving up the double. Overall, didn't necessarily love what I saw from Gsellman. A lot of pitches out in the middle of the plate, some hanging sliders that didn't get hit, but he knocked some rust off. We'll see what happens from here with him. Jacob Barnes, on the other hand, had a rough night. Came into that 5th inning with the Mets only trailing by 1 run, gave up 2 base hits, walked a batter, eventually gave up a 3-run homer, altogether 4 runs allowed. There was some that were questioning the move to go to Barnes because the Mets had a rested bullpen. They have Monday off, so the thought was, well, you probably can go to a Trevor May or a Miguel Castro in a 1-run game and try to keep things close so you can come back and win. But the Mets didn't score anyway, and it's clear to me that Rojas prioritizes protecting leads. When he has a win in hand, that's when he wants to go to the lockdown guys. So if that's his philosophy, I'm okay with pitching Barnes in that spot. Overall, you got to pitch these guys. You can't let them go completely cold. That's what I've been saying for some time now. So I can't be a hypocrite in this one spot because it didn't work out and say the Mets shouldn't have gone to Barnes, because Barnes could have pitched a clean inning and no one would have said any different. It's only judging by the results that we're criticizing it and saying that, you know, Miguel Castro or Trevor May should have been used. Rojas likes to save those guys when there's a lead to protect. And in this instance, when he's trying to work in some other guys, when you already stole a game in game one, I'm okay with going to Barnes. It just didn't work out. So I don't want to play the results out too much and criticize him on this one. I don't think the game is any different if Miguel Castro goes out there and pitches a scoreless inning. The Mets just didn't have any zip in game two. It was freezing. They've been on the field for hours at that point. They almost punted that game, quite honestly. After winning game one, stealing that one, there was maybe a little bit of resign that we're not going to win this one. We're going to pitch our back end or, you know, our lower leverage relievers and see if we can get away with it. And it just didn't work. Trevor Hildenberger did pitch as well. Good to see him make his Mets debut. I think there's something here for the Mets to continue to watch with him. Very interesting to see him come from that sidearm angle with a lot of movement on his pitches. He got a couple of strikeouts. He's someone that has some potential to be a big strikeout guy for the Mets, and that is obviously what you're looking for in some of these spots in high leverage situations. I don't know if he ever pitches to that level of confidence for Rojas, but could he end up higher in the pecking order than Barnes and Gesellman? I think there's a very likely possibility that that could happen. Anyway, the Mets were able to salvage all of this on Sunday. Let's focus on that game because Marcus Stroman was sensational. I'll talk about that in just a minute. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, with 18 amazing flavors, including the Caramel Brownie Bar, my personal favorite Cookies and Cream, Cherry Barcia Lemon Almond Cheesecake Carrot Cake, and the Apple Almond Crisp. These really are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, and they're healthy, as Built Bars come low in calorie, low in sugar. They're high in protein and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off at BuiltBar.com. When the New York Mets played the Rockies on Sunday, it came down to really one player. Marcus Stroman willed the Mets to a victory. Once again, the lineup didn't do much. They only scored 2 runs for the entire series at Coors Field. The Mets scored 8 runs in 23 innings. They were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position on Sunday. So this really came down to Stroman pitching an absolute gem. The Mets scored their runs in the second inning when Pete Alonso got a base hit, Michael Conforto doubled. And in that spot, early in the game, where you have 2 runners in scoring position with no outs, the Mets only managed to get 1 run on a Jeff McNeil groundout. Then you had the fourth inning. The Mets got their second run when Michael Conforto got a 2-out hit. Jeff McNeil reached on an error, and then J.D. Davis got a clutch 2-out single to drive in Conforto. But other than that, not much offense to speak of. So it came down to Stroman, who pitched 8 innings, gave up just 3 hits, 1 run, and had 5 strikeouts. And when I watched Stroman pitch, I've been saying this since the offseason, I thought he would lead this team in wins. There is something palpable about the energy that Stroh brings to the mound and the way that it rubs off on his teammates. There is something when you're out in the field and Jacob DeGrom's on the mound, there is maybe a tendency to get that you become part of the audience just watching his brilliance. You're sitting there, he's striking out 9 in a row, you're getting cold. Not to say that that's anything wrong with DeGrom's excellence, but it's a little bit harder to all of a sudden, when you're Jeff McNeil and you've been watching basically for 3 innings and a ball suddenly hit to you, to make a play. And so he made an error as soon as the ball was put into play. For Marcus Stroman, everybody's on their toes. This is a guy who is pumping himself up on the mound, who's pumping up his teammates. You know if you make a play, Stroh's going to be applauding you. He's going to be pointing you out. He's going to be giving you props. There's something about that collective camaraderie and energy that is brought on a Stroh day. When the Stroh show hits the mound, that everyone's got to be at their best because a ball can be coming their way. You got to make plays. You can turn double plays to get out of jams. And it's awesome to pair that with the energy that Lindor brings at shortstop, because when you have that level of a defender at short, and so far metrics are grading him out as one of the top defenders in all of baseball, if not just the best shortstop, to have Lindor behind Stroman, catching line drives, making plays on balls in the hole, turning double plays, it just makes this team fun to watch, and I think it really helps all of them play together. After this game where the Mets won, I tweeted something out about how Marcus Stroman reminds me of a really good point guard in the NBA, or maybe even a quarterback in the NFL, the type of quarterback who throws the ball in the first drive to 5 different receivers to get everyone involved. The point guard in the NBA who doesn't score his points in the first quarter, but is trying to set up his teammates, get everyone involved in the flow of the game. And then when it comes down to that point where the point guard, like a Chris Paul, has to take over, he'll do that. He'll step in, he'll score 8 points in a minute down the stretch to will his team to a victory. And I think it's a very similar thing that Stroman is bringing to the table for the Mets, where he is going to be pitching to contact. He's looking to get ground balls. He's looking to keep his teammates involved. But when there is a situation where the other team is threatening, if he has to buckle down and get strikeouts, he's able to do that. And we saw that in the seventh inning when Trevor Story got a double. Then Charlie Blackmon got a base hit, which scored Story. And this was a 2-1 game. And Stroman ends up collecting himself. He strikes out the next batter on 3 pitches. And the one after that on 4 pitches. 7 pitches later, he's out of the jam, 2 strikeouts. And the Mets are back in the dugout. So that's the type of pitcher that Stroman is. The ability to keep everyone involved, but also still having the put away pitches in his bag right now, that when he needs to get a big strikeout in a spot, he can. And what does pitching to a lineup mean when you're pitching to contact and keeping everyone involved? How does that reflect in your pitch count? Well, through 6 innings of this game, Stroman was only at 58 pitches. So that was the fallout or the result from keeping everyone involved, from pitching to contact. Is he able to go deep into games as well? And so he was able, after that 7th inning, to go back out in the 8th and bridge the gap himself to Edwin Diaz. And in that 8th inning, Marcus Stroman made one of the best plays you'll ever see from a pitcher. Maybe, you know, I have to go through the list, the second best behind-the-back play a pitcher's ever made in a Mets uniform, because I still got to give Bartolo Colon's behind-the-back flip to Eric Campbell the nod as the best behind-the-back play, but this one was right up there. Comebacker hit at Stroman. He's able to reach behind his back, field the ball. His momentum from fielding has kind of taken him away from first base. He somehow just, you know, gets the ball to Pete whoever he can, you know, throws what ends up being like a 10-hopper. He was basically throwing a grounder to your first baseman. Alonso able to dig it out, and the Mets get a big out in that spot. That was to start off the 8th. Stroman got through the rest of the inning. And then in the 9th inning, Edwin Diaz got another save. Good to see him get saves 2 days in a row to win a series. That's the type of closer they need him to be. But he also got a big assist as the final out of the game was made by James McCann, as Trevor Story had gotten a base hit, was trying to steal second to get himself in scoring position with 2 outs. And McCann just used his cannon of an arm to gun him out. Lindor makes the quick tag on him, immediately knows the Mets had the victory in hand, celebrates on the field. It's little moments like that that make this team fun to watch. If you think about this series, the Mets did not play well, but they were playing a bad team and they got 2 wins. In the past, this is the type of series the Mets absolutely would have lost. They probably would have got swept. But the ability to win games ugly is a trait of teams that have aspirations to win a World Series or just have playoff aspirations. You got to be able to find a way when nothing else is working. And you look at what happened game one of the doubleheader on Saturday to pull off that rally in the 7th inning, which would have technically been like a 9th inning rally in the shortened game. And then on Sunday, when your bats are completely cold, to get an outstanding pitching performance by Marcus Stroman, to make all the plays behind him defensively that get you through that tightrope of a game. You look up now, you get on the plane, you're in first place in the East, you've won another series, and now you head out to Chicago to take on the Cubs. Although who knows when that series gets played, because the Mets have an off day today on Monday, and then they're supposed to play on Tuesday, but there's apparently a lot of snow in the forecast, so we could be looking at another doubleheader on Wednesday. Regardless though, on tomorrow's show, I will be talking about what has held this Mets offense back so far from reaching its true potential, and and I will also preview that series with the Cubs. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure that you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. And if you're addicted to fantasy baseball, you now have a new resource that will give you an advantage in your leagues, and that's Locked On Fantasy Baseball, a daily show hosted by veteran analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of experience to offer the strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Follow Locked On Fantasy Baseball on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.